Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Telerik. Create compelling app experiences across any screen with the Telerik platform. Telerik's end-to-end platform uniquely combines industry-leading UI tools with cloud services to simplify the entire app development cycle. Telerik offers everything .NET developers need to build quality apps faster. Try it free at telerik.com/platform. That's telerik.com/platform.
From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 457. In this episode, Scott talks with Stephen Edward about making continuous integration and easy deployment possible in the cloud.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. I'm talking with Stephen Edward. How are you?
Hey, how's it going, Scott?
I'm pretty good. I'm learning a lot of stuff from exploring your GitHub repository here. You are all about continuous integration, are you not?
I love continuous integration. And the thing is, people don't realize how easy it is.
I mean, basically, if you have to do something twice, it should be automated, right?
Absolutely. You know, this validation of like, hey, is something working or not? You should just know, like, right at check-in.
Mm-hmm. I noticed, particularly your resume. I went up and looked at your resume. I know it's always weird to start a show when you're talking to a guest. You're like, I looked at your resume. But what's kind of rocking cool about your resume is that you use this thing called JSON resume. You basically took a JSON schema and you compile your resume into HTML, you know, or PDF or whatever. And this is something built in Node, right?
Yeah. So I was actually like perusing Hacker News and I saw like someone posted like this little open source project for, you know, building a resume out of JSON. And it's powered by Node. And essentially it's just a command line interface and you just run this, this package that they've included in this interface and it'll just scan through this JSON schema and compile it into whatever format you want. And it could be HTML, it could be Markdown, it could be PDF. And the cool part is you could just take that and, you know, just source control it and then hook it up to continuous integration and deploy it, right? Like every time you change your resume. So it's pretty clever, actually.
Mm-hmm. And this is a Node. So I would say NPM, Node Package Manager, install resume-CLI. CLI is command line interface?
Command line interface, yeah. You want to make sure we do it globally so you could use it anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, you know, you make your JSON file and you got all this up on your GitHub. But what I thought was cool about it was that you did some stuff in Azure that, you know, like after the fact, I realized this is pretty obvious, but it was really clean. You basically got Azure websites to compile this for you.
Yep. Exactly. So, the cool part about it is that, a lot of people don't realize that Azure websites, like the name is kind of silly. It's not just websites. It's like, it's really like an app engine, right? So you could take this thing and you could say, hey, can you go through these steps I'm going to define for you when you check in? And these steps could be anything. And in this case, we know the steps that we need to do to build our resume. We know that we need to, you know, make sure the schema is correct. We need to run a certain command that will compile it. And we need to output it to a static web page. So what we do is we'll just output it to like a static index.html, put it in the right spot on the Azure website. And then so that we know when we do check-in, it builds that new index.html. So when you do a git push, you should be able to see the change happen on your website when you refresh.
So you made an Azure website. You're using, again, the what they call the XPLAT or cross-platform CLI.
Yep. And so that cross-platform CLI is actually pretty awesome because you can run it from anywhere. Like it literally, if Node runs on the thing, you can run it on a Raspberry Pi. Like that's how
Seriously?
Cool it is. Yes, you can.
I did not know that. I assume you know that because you tried that.
I tried it, yes. it's actually kind of cool. I don't think the actual CLI has any native components to it, which is pretty nice. So, you can run it from Unix, you can run it from Red Hat, whatever you're using. So it's pretty nice.
So one of the things where this goes beyond just regular, put a Node app up into Azure was that you started digging into what we call Kudu. Right, which is the deployment system behind Azure websites.
Yeah, it's actually behind mobile services too. So this thing, Kudu, is like this mechanism that really just follows, either generates instructions or you takes your instructions that you want, and that's based on a script, and it'll munch on these steps. And then after it's done with that, it'll move your stuff from a certain area, like directory on your website, to the deployment directory, the site, the directory that's actually served up by IIS, the serving, the web service. So if those steps are defined by scripts, so you could really tell it to do anything, or it could, Azure websites will actually sniff and see, oh, are you using Ruby or are you using Python? And it'll actually just make one for you if you don't know what you want.
Mm-hmm. And Azure websites has, what's it called, Cygwin installed, so you can use shell scripts to run. But you used a command. You did a real basic. You basically have like effectively a batch file that runs.
Yep. You could do a batch file. You could do a bash file, like you mentioned. You could also do JavaScript with Node, since Node's installed on all the boxes already. So the command could just be node deploy.js instead of, if you prefer to use JavaScript instead, which is a little nicer than batch, but for this case, it was actually really easy. So the example that I took out was essentially the Azure CLI will actually generate a kind of like this script for you. So you could say like, hey, Azure CLI, can you just make me a script for Python, or can you make me a script for Node, or can you just make me a script for a static website? You make that script, and then from there, you can just kind of start playing with it. And one of the easiest or most interesting ways to play with it is by just adding tests in there. So say you got a unit test framework, you could just, you know, say, well, here are the commands to run the test, and just do it, and then it'll just deploy.
So when you say Azure Site Deployment Script, it spits out a script. You can get the default script that they'll give you, right? But you said --basic?
Yeah, so I did --basic for, I'm pretty sure, for resume. For the resume, it's just outputting a static index HTML, right, with all my resume information, all the nice formatting, all the things that it needs there. But there's nothing dynamic about it. You look at my resume, it's not going to change based on who you are or whatever. So there's no server for that. But if you were to do like Node, you would say, hey, well, I want --node because that's what I'm making a Node website. And it'll just generate the default deployment for Node. And what I really like about it is that it's super obvious where you should change, right? You should say, well, here's where it's going to deploy. So maybe I want to run some validation before that. And you just do the commands that you want. Scott, are you familiar with like Travis CI?
Right. Yeah. I used AppVeyor for most of my stuff because most of my stuff's in .NET, but Travis CI is kind of a continuous integration service in the cloud.
Yep, exactly. It's the same thing, really. It's just, it's really focused for Linux development. But it's the same idea where these guys will just give you a little script and says, okay, well, here's what we're going to run. Tell us how to run. If you're doing Node, for example, it says, well, here's the things, the two, three things we require, like the command that you need to run so that we can actually, run your build. And a lot of the things in this build is like linting or minifying or even running like tests with your unit test framework of choice.
When do you think that you should move from having, in this case, Azure deployment scripts doing your build, which is what you're doing here in the resume example, to an actual proper continuous integration server where the build happens elsewhere and then the deployment happens into Azure? Because I think with these Git deploy systems, whether it be at Heroku or whether it be at Azure, there's a little bit of confusion about responsibility sometimes.
Yep.
And people, they move from a basic website where they commit some code into Azure with Git, and then they get frustrated that it's not doing all the build right there. And you have to ask yourself, when is it the website's responsibility to build itself in production versus having a continuous integration server elsewhere do that work?
Well, so, you know, the way things are set up right now, I don't see a reason why you can't either use two different ones. Like, for example, you can take the same repository and say, well, I have my dev branch or I have my, pre-deployment branch or whatever, and point those to different web instances. And they can be called websites, but really they're compute instances in the cloud. They don't necessarily have to be responsible for hosting your production. But what they can do is they can still run that continuous integration build and run that validation. And afterwards, there's nothing stopping you from saying, okay, well, we did that. Now let's go ahead and deploy that to the production site. So I think the point that it would make sense is where it doesn't really make much sense to have your production server be building your stuff. You can get away with it, but once you start to hit, you know, a scalable amount of traffic to where that compute takes away from your servicing ability, it's just obvious at that point. You're like, well, there's two things. You could either make stand up your own server, which is kind of a pain. You could also, use one of these services, just make sure that it's not meant for production web.
Mm-hmm. Up on your GitHub, you've got a repository called Azure DevOps Labs. Mm-hmm. And you basically have four labs up there breaking up four different scenarios. I thought it would be cool to go over those.
Yeah. So, what's hilarious about this is that, I write everything on GitHub just because, but this was really for just the internal TED team, like within Microsoft that I was giving a presentation.
What is TED?
TED is the technology engagement. It's so funny. We always throw these acronyms around.
So you don't even know what TED is, but you work for them.
I know that they do global evangelism with like large scale companies, but you always forget the acronyms.
But you're in the Bay Area, right?
Yeah, I'm in the Bay Area and I'm actually on the developer experience team. Okay. And so they asked me, hey, Steven, can you give a talk on, Azure DevOps? And from a perspective that I would from since I'm in the Bay, and I'm like, oh, well, that's great. So I'll go ahead and write this thing up, and I'll just go ahead and put it in GitHub anyways, just in case I want to reuse it or whatever. And I guess someone else found it. It was never really intended it was for public audiences, but I never actually.
Hey, man, it's got a URL. It's public right there. Right? It has stars on GitHub's on GitHub. Therefore, I will call you and we will do a show about it because I found it to be very useful. I mean, it may be rough, but it's useful information here because I learned from the resume how to do real basic build. But here you're like, let's start with the IaaS. The IaaS is the infrastructure as a service. You're doing some automation with XPLAT making virtual machines.
Yep, exactly. So, what's cool is that, so, like we mentioned before, there's a cross-platform CLI. So what is that? It's just basically a command line interface that you can control your cloud resources. Things like your Azure apps, so like your websites, platform services, as well as infrastructure things like virtual machines. So this lab takes us through like, hey, well, how do you create, these virtual machines just through your CLI? And then not only just using the command line interface, because that's not interesting. The interesting part is, well, how do I define my service in code? Why would you want to do this? Well, the reason why you want to define your service that you'd like to do that is because you can actually take this code and source control it. Say that you have a team of three people and they want to stand up their own instance of the service for their own development purposes. Well, you can take a configuration file. You could say, well, John's instance is going to be these three machines and it's going to use this network, but you can configure that. But the same architecture, the infrastructure needed for that service can just be coded away. And then you can just save that and you can change it as you need if things change. Or you say that you wonder, hey, well, why do we only use three virtual machines for an instance of the service and not four like we used to? Well, you just go back through your check-in history and you can see why someone changed something. So as your service, the shape of your service infrastructure changes, you literally have a history of that. So it's super powerful. And I think that's the biggest gain. And what you'll see this walkthrough do is actually do something interesting. It'll actually use JavaScript and Node to do your programming for the infrastructure. And traditionally you'll usually see batch script or bash script, for this. So I thought that was really cool. There's actually this cool library called Azure Scripty and it's right on NPM. And it's fantastic on parsing the command line arguments in and out. Mm-hmm. And it makes it super easy to be like, well, the first argument is going to be virtual machine. So what are the virtual machine names? Things like that.
I think that was made by Glenn Block, who used to work for us.
Glenn Block made it. And I was like, yeah.
Kudos. And then you can take that to the next level with something like Azure Resource Manager. And I guess you can switch back and forth with the command line. You can say Azure config. Yep. You can go mode arm, which is the resource manager kind of declarative way.
Okay. Yep.
And then is it mode ASM, which is more of the procedural way?
It's more of a procedural way. And I don't think the resource manager's gone out publicly yet, has it?
I'm looking at the documentation right here using the Azure cross-platform command line interface.
Yeah.
It's a real similar kind of idea where you've got a JSON file that expresses, here's what a you know, I don't know, a Steven app looks like, and it's got, you know, two web servers and a MongoDB and a Redis, and it's basically a declarative expression of what your resource looks like, and it can make that in chunks. So you can automate pretty significant deployments that way. Yep.
Oh, and then it'll make a that declarative way. It's really cool, in my opinion, because it kind of doesn't just force you to do this. Oh, you know, and now I want you to check to see if this is here. It's a little higher level, which I like about it.
Mm-hmm. So I can do automation with scripting. I can do kind of declarative automation. But what is Chef, and why would I want to do something like that? That seems more sophisticated.
So Chef is definitely more sophisticated. So I was asked, hey, Steven, can you do a talk about Chef as well? And I was like, oh man. I think I've only seen this thing twice. So I actually decided to play around with it. Mm-hmm. And so, the way it works is actually kind of neat is that, Chef is completely open source. You can run their Chef server if you want, and you can just take it. You don't even have to pay them a dime. But you can, the easiest thing to do is, well, go on the Chef website and create this, Chef server, which basically is on their cloud and just runs this little instance that manages other servers. And really it came out in, really super popular in Linux development. Mm-hmm. And so each instance in a Chef deployment has its own agent. And the cool part about this walkthrough is that it kind of shows you, it kind of highlights the fact that when you make virtual machines on Azure, you can just check a box that says, hey, I want Chef to manage this machine. And what you do is you just pass a particular file. And I actually forgot the exact name of it.
But are VM extensions, right? This is a way of saying that I'm going to make a virtual machine. And when it comes up, I already want Chef on the thing. I want it prepped.
Yep, exactly. That's what you're saying. So the cool part about it is after you actually create that virtual machine, mm-hmm. go back to your Chef website or your Chef app, the one that runs on chef.com or that you run personally, and you'll see it pop up as a Chef managed instance, which is really cool. So then that allows you to do a variety of things like, hey, you want this particular server installed. If you want MongoDB installed on these machines or if you want whatever, like it will just do it for you. So it makes it a lot easier. Now it's all Ruby based, which is kind of interesting as well, but it's super popular in the open source community for, just IaaS management.
Mm-hmm. And you can, it's kind of, they take the metaphor of Chef. Like really far.
Yeah, I know.
Like the thing you plug into Chef for Azure is knife.
Yeah.
And you want to make something, you make a cookbook, you know.
And each cookbook has a recipe.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Like the metaphor works though, but you can end up with basically here's how I set up my machine file. Mm-hmm. Set up a Windows package, use this cookbook, run this batch file, set up this PowerShell script, and then start this service.
Yep.
And then another, I have a thing on Azure Friday about, Octopus Deploy, which is kind of a more Windowsy, more .NET-y deployment system. That's also can be set up as a VM extension. And these VM extensions, basically, like I said, when the VM starts up, it has the extension already. And that's your hook into, you know, what they call desired state configuration, right? Like I want this set up this way in that state.
That's interesting. And this Octopus Deploy, is that controlled by a central server or something?
Just octopuses and tentacles. Same kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you've got a lot of really cool options. I think the point is, and you'd probably agree, that you should probably graduate from a batch file pretty fast.
Yes.
That should not be your primary
way. That should be your primary way of deploying. Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Now, I like websites more, I would have to say, than virtual machines. I don't like to maintain virtual machines and keep them alive.
Absolutely.
I prefer to do continuous delivery using Azure websites.
To this day, I still like really, really push and hope that the team like says, hey, you know what? It'd be better if we called this something else because customers I always talk to is like, well, it's just runs websites, right? And it's like, no, it does so many more things. It's literally just a compute instance. It's, what used to be, I think they're falling into favor in place of web, what was it called? Web roles?
The way I look at it is, and I actually have a slide on this somewhere. Virtual machines are like owning your own car. You have to maintain it. You have to deal with it.
Yep.
And websites are like, you know, renting a car where you can trash it, but you can return the car.
Yeah, exactly.
And then software as a service is like a limo.
Yeah, and you just get driven around.
You just get driven around and do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, that's pretty good comparison. It's pretty accurate.
So what is Atlassian? How does that relate to continuous delivery in Azure websites?
So the awesome thing about this, so when I wrote this, I was like, let me pick something that people don't know that they could do. So the cool part about these, especially source control services, like Atlassian owns Bitbucket. They're an ALM company. They're based out of Australia, but they got a big office here too. And basically, these guys create tools to build software. People to organize people, organize engineering tasks, organize your code, everything start to finish. Now, these guys run their own build services. I think they actually just hook into AWS. So you're required to have an AWS account, so they don't actually run that infrastructure, as well as HipChat, which is like, hey, a chat service where you could chat between like your teammates, and it's a lot easier, more productive. Task management, Jira is their continuous integration service, and Bitbucket is their equivalent to GitHub. Cool thing about Bitbucket is that it's free. Like, it's
free for private repos, even. Yeah.
I'll talk to startups. They'll use that's the only reason they'll use Bitbucket. Otherwise, they have some like
really
deal with yeah.
They're that cheap that they won't pay the $10.
Oh, well, you don't understand. I know very early stage guys that are either that or they're using like GitHub with like a student account or something.
Yeah, I need it. Like when people say I'm a very early stage startup, that means that they just registered the domain.
Yeah,
this is the thing about the Bay. I was complaining about this online a while back, where it's like you register the domain and you get to walk around calling yourself a founder.
Yeah, and that's everybody's their own sort of founder out here. You get real sick of it real quick.
You register a domain for $15. I don't think you get to call yourself a founder. Okay, so when you go into Bitbucket, you create a repo. This is kind of like Visual Studio Online, right?
Yeah, it's very similar to that. So VS Online is the same thing. It says, hey, well, here's a Git repository. Here's a link. You can create these, you can create the repositories. You can also have issues and like pull requests. You can do a few things there. Actually not sure if Visual Studio supports, pull request. But it's the same idea. It's just this little private area for your team to build software. So it's not necessarily the same spirit of GitHub where it's a social thing. It's more of, hey, I have me and four friends and this is what we're building. Mm-hmm. So Atlassian, it's the same thing. So you create like a repository, and then afterwards, after you create that repository, it's super easy to hook that up to your Azure website. So say that you got like a Python website, or you have a Node website, a PHP website, or even .NET. Mm-hmm. It's really easy. So you would just basically go into Azure and you say, well, I want a new website. And it'll literally ask you, where is your source? And you have different options. You could even deploy from Dropbox too, which I'm not exactly sure how that works.
Dropbox is actually clever because the Dropbox stuff is still using Git underneath.
Oh, is it?
What we do is we pull it out of Dropbox, stick it in a local Git repository, and then use the standard Git deployment the way it is before. And people get freaked out about the idea of a Dropbox deployment, but ultimately for doing, you know, things with designers or quick prototyping, it's a really nice way to do things. And you've still got Git, which means you still have the ability to do rollback.
Oh, so that's interesting. So if I have like a designer that's, you know, working on assets, or just modifying some CSS or whatever, they can just drop it in there without having. Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was wondering why we had that. So, but anyway, so you just click on Bitbucket and you say, okay, well, then it will literally ask you, well, what repository? And the coolest part, I think, is that we have branch. We go into branch granularity as well, so we don't just assume master. Mm-hmm. So you could say like, I have my dev branch, or I have my Steven branch. Just my branch of the code for this product instead of just a master deployment. Mm-hmm. And then you can actually, when you check into that branch, there's these things, and GitHub has it too, but you can register any third-party app. In this case, it's Azure, can say, register a callback, register mm-hmm. an endpoint. And when the user pushes to that repository, give me a call. Let me know.
So an endpoint is like a URL, basically.
Basically a URL. And you're saying, so in this case, Azure goes to Atlassian Bitbucket, and they're like, hey, Bitbucket, call this URL when I push to the repository. And it just does it. Mm-hmm. And that tells Azure websites, hey, you know, it's like a vacuum, just like suck all this code up out of this repository at the latest commit. Mm-hmm. And the cool part is you get this metadata too. So you get like the metadata of like, hey, well, who's the author? Who deployed it? So You know,
because it did a post to do that.
Exactly.
And it posted you a little envelope of here's what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Some metadata about that commit. And now the thing is that now if someone breaks your build, now you know who did it.
Yep. And then you get the, some buddies of mine have a thing called the siren of shame. And it basically, it's a big police siren that you set in your cube farm and it goes off when somebody breaks the build.
Yep.
I always thought it would be cool to have like gauntlet, like elf shot the food. And it would just announce like, you know, Edward broke the build. I noticed also in your, in that particular example with the Atlassian, you again exploit the deployment scripts. In this case, you run Grunt.
Yep, exactly. So, Grunt is actually, if you're familiar with Node, Grunt is like your default, de facto, build infrastructure, like build task engine.
Although the hipsters will say Gulp is the spiritual successor to Grunt, will they not?
Yes. And, you know, yes, they would say that. But the thing is that when you have like literally any library you can think of will probably like have some type of support for Grunt, right? Mm. So you could be indie or you could be hipster and be like, this
okay.
is cool.
So the haters may say that, but we like Grunt.
Yeah. I like it anyways. So the cool part is that, Grunt, yeah. So Grunt's like you're similar, and also you can compare it to something like MS Build. It's the same idea. So what you basically do is what we're going to do in the steps for the installation is, hey, we're just going to tell, you know, you remember that we have Node installed. Because we have Node, we have NPM. And because we have those two things, we could do whatever we want as far as Node goes.
And we have Node installed because we're Azure, not because we're a Node app.
Yeah, not because we're Node app, because we're Azure. Azure just has it by default. So all I really got to do is just say, well, npm install Grunt, install the CLI. And then from that point on, any plugins, Grunt has these different plugins. Like this case, I think I grabbed the Uglify plugin, as well as I think that the Submitification. There's other things too, like you can grab like the Mocha plugin, and it'll do, it'll plug in, and I think I actually do it in this walkthrough, I add Mocha, and you add Mocha in it too, so to run your unit tests. And Mocha's just a unit test framework. And I know you're about to tell me about three different unit test frameworks, but
I'm just learning. Every time I mention Grunt, someone jumps in and tells me I shouldn't be using it. That's the thing, that there's so many cool libraries out there that there's always, yeah, as soon as I learn one, there's another one I should use instead.
Yeah.
So what does Mocha do as it relates to Grunt?
Mocha is basically your unit test harness.
Okay.
So think about, I want to test this build, or not this build, but this function. Mm-hmm. And it's actually kind of, cute. I think something in Ruby does the same thing. It's based off some Ruby library as well, but basically it says, describe. There's a describe function, and then there's like an it function. So you say like, describe pound what is the name of the function. And then within that function, you have another function called it. And it's like, it should return a list, yeah, of recipes or whatever. So it's actually kind of cool.
So it's kind of a fluent BDD, behavior-driven,
yep, exactly,
kind of a thing. And all of this goes into your deployment script. So kind of bringing it all back to the beginning of the conversation, mm-hmm, these are all things you could potentially do as part of a deployment. I can minify, I can compress, I can build, I can run my tests. And then presumably if the test fails, will there be an error level that's thrown back that would cause that deployment to fail?
Yeah. So what's cool is that you can take the, just go into the batch file and you see that if something fails, there's like this already baked in, like, this is the failure branch. So all you have to do is check that error level of, you know, hey, you tried to do this command and it failed. Well, you got a non-zero error. So you just go over, you know, if the error is not equal to zero, then go to that failure block and it'll just break the build. Like, the build will just stop. And so, interesting about that. So remember, we have the metadata around that. So you'll get is a nice little dialogue in Azure that with the big X that says this build, deployment failed. And then you'll see the person, the author, and you'll see the actual commit ID. So you could look inside there and I can see, like, if I wanted to break the build, you could just click that ID and it'll show you the diff of why that build failed. So you get a lot of good stuff right from, like, you know, right from your web browser. So it's really nice.
And then later on, you put in New Relic, and then you pushed traffic to the site, except now you went into Visual Studio and you used the web recorder, and you basically like pounded on your Azure website to see if your performance is up to snuff.
Yep, exactly. So it's really easy, actually. I think these guys in New Relic, like they are really clever, really slick. I think they're like monkey patching or something your website to actually get their plugin to work.
New Relic is pretty amazing. They'll, like you said, they'll do what's called monkey patching on Node, but on .NET, they actually plug in as a profiler. So they're in there as a runtime CLR profiler. Mm-hmm.
And so the cool thing is, you right from there, you just install it, and to you, it's like magic, and you'll get you can go into Visual Studio, and that's like the last, I think that's one of my last labs, but you go into Visual Studio, and you say, hey, if I want to run a load test, and you could like, load testing, like, this was actually something I think is really awesome about VS Online. So if someone ever asked me, like, hey, why would you use it? This is like the main reason, because all the other, like, at least a month ago or two, like, I think a month ago when I checked, like, the solutions or the tools out there for load testing isn't as great as what this offers. So, the cool thing is you can actually go into Visual Studio. You could say, hey, I want to record a web test. And what's a little bit of a shame is that it's kind of stuck under, C#, like a C# project. Whereas, although there are some things that are specific, for like profiling on .NET, for the most part, you can get a lot of value out of it, by just creating a load, a performance test, right out of the box, but it's kind of set up as a C# thing. But if you kind of, throw that to the side, you could say, well, I'm going to make a new test and you just record your clicks and your actions on a page. You can go through your whole web app and just do the same thing. Go through everyone, like change, you know, enter whatever you want, do whatever you want. And then that's all recorded. And what you do is you just create a new load test in VS and say, hey, I want you to run those steps, however many times. And it'll actually do things like modify the time difference between your steps so that it's like normalized. So pretend that you have like 1,000 people or 10,000 people or 100,000 people using your website. They all use your website in slightly different ways, right? So it kind of like puts a little bit of normalized randomness between, all those people or all those instances. And you can take that test and run it in Azure. And why is that cool? Well, and VS Online, but VS Online is running on Azure. You basically take as many machines as you need to pound on your website. Whereas like the load testers I found, they're like simple ones online. It's like, oh, just give us your link and we'll do like get 200 requests on it, you know, a few thousand times, which isn't really that helpful. But in this case, we're doing a variety of simulated actions that a user would do. And you can even simulate user agents. So you could say like, oh, I have 25% Chrome, 25% Safari, 25% IE, and like 20%. So you could do a lot of stuff that you wouldn't normally be able to do. And this is like secret sauce in there. Like, I really love this stuff. So it's a bit bulky. That's the only downside of it. So you have to like install Visual Studio and you have to have this particular SKU. So it's really, it's kind of hidden behind this like walled garden a bit, but it's actually really useful.
Very cool. Well, people can learn all about you at your blog at stephenedouard.com. I'll be sure to link folks to your GitHub repo and these very useful DevOps labs.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Scott, for having me.
Yeah, thanks for letting me know all about how continuous integration kicks butt. I appreciate it.
Awesome.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. We'll see you again next week.